Good morning. This is Open Mike Eagle, and welcome to my podcast, Secret Skin. It's a very special episode. On this episode, we have an interview with my good friend and world-renowned stand-up comedian, Hannibal Buress. That's coming up real soon on the program. This has been a very cool week. We made an announcement. I have a new album on the way. Me and Paul White out of Great Britain, we made an album called Hella Personal Film Festival. And we put out the first single for it. It's called Check to Check. Premiered by the Pitchforks. For any of you guys, you Secret Skinners, Skindinavians, special skintress groups that haven't heard the song, I'm going to put it again at the end of this episode. Because I love you. The album is available for pre-order now. If you go to Bandcamp and search me and Paul White and Hella Personal Film Festival. I think it's OpenMikeEagle360 at Bandcamp.com or something like that. There's not an at sign because the website is not an email address. My mistake. And please do pre-order it. It's due out March 25th. Got a couple of dates I want to plug real quick. Me and Serengeti will be in Chicago and Madison, Wisconsin and Milwaukee and Minneapolis from February 18th to the 21st. Check out MikeEagle.net for specific dates and venues. Tickets for those shows are available now. Now, our interview with Hannibal is a long one. My editors, they were lenient on me this week. I should tell you guys, I have a celebrity editor who shall remain secret. But shout out to my celebrity editor. But our talk ran long, so I'm not going to keep this open going for very long. I have Hannibal on the show this week, and I know him being a good friend of mine and being also a very famous person. I've had a lot of people ask me how come he hasn't been on the show. This is going into episode 46 now. So a ton of people have asked how come Hannibal's not been on the show. And I start off our conversation by addressing that very thing with him. And without any further ado, I'm going to get into it. This is my talk with Hannibal Buress.
There's a secret radio hour.
This is Secret Skin.
There's a secret radio hour. There's a secret radio hour. There's a secret radio hour.
Man, it's funny, dude. You know, I'm about damn near close to 50 episodes deep in this podcast,
and yeah,
you know you gotta be the number one requested guest from day one. When you going Hannibal on? When you going Hannibal on? When you going Hannibal on? And it's a weird thing I try to explain to people, but it's like with you and with like Serengeti and kind of like a bus driver too, even though I've had bus driver on once, it's a little difficult to interview somebody if you know them too well.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You feel like I already know the answers to most of this shit.
Oh, you have to play goofy for the audience.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to say too. If I ask you something that you know I already know, you know what I mean? Just help me play along for the people out there. We go back a long way.
Yeah. 2001 or 2000?
Yeah, and I was thinking about it today because you went to Whitney Young for a bit, so we didn't know each other then. That's the high school I went to when they had the
Academic Center,
which is the 7th and 8th grade program.
The gifted program.
That's right.
Just so people, you know. students bust in from all around Chicago, all parts.
What part was you bust in from?
The west side, like North Avenue and Austin.
How far was that from Whitney Young? Because it's on the west side, too.
But it's like from, you know, Whitney Young is more downtown-ish.
Yeah.
So it was about, I guess, it was a long-ass bus ride because it's picking up a lot of people.
Oh, like school. That's where it's happening. They bring up some school buses.
So it was, I think, with no, you know, as a car ride, it would be maybe 20-something minutes.
Right.
But that was about an hour and some bus picking up folks.
You know what? I wish I could say I didn't have an experience taking a school bus to Whitney Young. But I had broke my leg my sophomore year.
Yeah.
And, so they had me on the school bus.
They had you on the Accu bus?
Well, it was mostly the hearing impaired bus.
Oh.
So we was have some wild ass bus rides, man.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I got kicked off the bus.
What? How'd you get kicked off the bus?
In eighth grade? I think it was seventh grade. I used to moon people.
So wait a minute. So what was the story of the day you got caught or whatever?
The dude, I got too cocky.
Yeah.
And it was a short bus. It was the four row joint.
The little half a bus.
Yeah. And so I used to always do it from the back. And I got cocky. I did that shit from the first seat.
Wow.
And the bus driver looked back and was like, whoa. And I got caught up.
Damn.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Got kicked off the bus. And then so I had to take public transportation to Whitney Young from the west side, which is even tougher than being on a school bus. You had to take the Austin bus down to Jackson, and Jackson bus from where it starts at Austin all the way down to Whitney Young, which is Whitney Young's Laughlin.
Yeah.
Let's say 50 blocks, roughly. Damn. On the bus, stopping, having to be on there with Crane kids.
Yeah, oh, no. Hell no. Hell no. Crane.
While I was in seventh grade.
Crane, was that vocational high school or whatever? Full of big, humongous monsters?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I wish, you know, it's funny, man. I hear you talk about your route there, and I'm like, man, I have no idea what the website is like. Dude. I have no clue. Like,
well, yeah, if you have no idea, then I really lost the audience.
Oh, well, yeah, maybe. But we'll just say it was dangerous.
It was it was dangerous, and it was far.
Right.
50 blocks in Chicago is about, what is that, so 6 miles.
Yeah.
But with lots of stops.
And no sidewalks over there.
Yeah.
West Side is known for its lack of sidewalks.
What? West Side has sidewalks?
Some of it don't, though. It's just buildings and in the street. Like, it ain't no sidewalk over there. I always found that really interesting.
I don't know that part.
Am I making that shit up?
I don't know if you're making it up.
There might be some lore.
Yeah. There might be some busted sidewalks, but there's sidewalks.
So you went for 7th and 8th grade, to Whitney Young?
Yeah.
How come you didn't go to high school at Whitney Young?
They asked me to leave.
Damn, you got kicked off the bus and didn't get invited.
I wasn't a great student there. I didn't handle the adjustment from being at a small private Lutheran school to being in a big high school. I didn't handle that well.
So what was there an incident? Was it a collection of small little things?
Lots of small things and just irresponsibility. And so I graduated, and then they didn't tell. They just sent a transfer document to Steinmetz to my house.
Damn!
To my local school. They just sent it was just whatever neighborhood I would have been in, they would have just sent the transfer to that.
Did you end up going? You didn't go to Steinmetz, though.
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
You ain't doing any academic decathlon stuff, did you?
No, okay. But that was
you
funny.
You would have had a vengeance, like you'd have been like, kill Whitney Young. You know what
was what's funny is that that was when you talking about the it was a movie called Cheaters
on
HBO
right.
About Steinmetz cheating and Whitney Young being the powerhouse. So we used to I used to, when I was in 7th or 8th grade, we used to make fun of Steinmetz.
Right.
Like, oh, the cheetah school, Steinmetz. Oh, we sucks. Go to Whitney Young, the smart school.
And then
I ended up at the cheetah school.
Damn.
And then when I would talk to my friends that still went to Whitney Young, they were, oh, the cheetah school. You go to the, oh, shit sucks. I could have went to Providence St. Mel.
Yeah.
Thought about it. I tested for there and I could have got a scholarship. I don't know why I didn't go. I think it was just something about, I don't know. But I was, it just seemed like a, Providence St. Mel, like a private school, got a high college admission rate. But yeah, I just didn't do it.
I mean, so you've always, were you all, you know, in kind of advanced program, kind of gifted, kind of school situations?
Well, no, only for 2 years at Whitney Young.
Damn.
But no, I was did really well in grade school up until 6th grade, then, you know, was spotty from 7th grade to high school. Flashes of
brilliance.
Yeah, flashes of brilliance. A very spotty report card. Like, oh, he has a. An A, 3 C's, D minus.
I mean, you know, and we did meet at SIU, and we all know SIU is the center of underachievement in Illinois. You know what I mean? Like all sorts of people there with all sorts of abilities that didn't really apply themselves typically.
Yeah.
How people ended up at SIU. So, like, did you, I mean, you know, having them flashes of brilliance, did your family have, like, high expectations?
Yeah. Oh, a lot. Yeah, they were, especially my dad, because I had crazy test scores.
So that's the kind of thing. You would take the standardized test and do really well and end up in these.
They were like, you got the fucking, you got 90s and all, 9 and 5 and all. And now what the fuck? I had a bowl. He wouldn't say it like that.
I'm about to say, is that how your dad talks?
Had a bowl. No, I can't. I need headphones to properly mimic my dad.
I hear you.
Yeah, you hear it? Yep.
I mean, I feel like, because I met your parents, but like, what was they like? Was they on you real tough to do well in school? And then when you didn't, like, what was they like?
They weren't really on me. It was just more of a, when shit would come, they'd be like, what? They'd be kind of upset. Huh. Well, I try to hide grades. I was good at hiding grades.
How did you hide grades? You had brothers and sisters too, right?
Yeah.
And so everybody gets their grades at the same time. So how did you hide grades?
I don't know. I just remember I definitely hit them on some occasions. Of just Also, Steinmetz had this thing where if you missed a class or if you skipped school, they had a robocaller where they were like, hey, you missed class. Such and such missed class. So it was all about beating that call. Or always picking up the phone and weirdly rushing to the phone. Which, in hindsight, was probably super sketchy behavior.
That was a tell.
It's probably a tell. Like, why is he so excited to get to the phone?
But they never figured it out. They trusted you.
Yeah, they just, I'm sure they got it. They're not dumb
people. So, I mean, I knew you on campus. Ended up being RA in your dorm for, I mean, at least 1 year, right?
I think it was 1 year,
And I if my memory serves me correctly, was that the year you started comedy, or was it a little before that?
I think it was that year, but I started, I think you were my RA in fall of 02.
That sounds about right.
Going into 03, I started comedy spring of 02, which is my sophomore year.
So, you know, I knew you around just in the social scene, SIU being a school where it's, you know, it's 22,000 students, like 2,000 blacks. So it's like we was our own little HBCU in the middle of the state school. So everybody knew each other. Everybody ran into each other all the time. And, you know, I knew you to be, you know, a funny guy. But, you know, I didn't really take you for, like, professional stand-up funny.
Me either.
Yeah. So what made you want to really do it? Like, what was the impetus for you really starting?
I went, remember Chidi used to do stand-up.
Yeah.
My old friend Chidi. He
I actually didn't know Chidi did stand up.
Yeah, Chidi would do open mics and stuff. And so I knew Chidi from, you know, a couple years back before I even started at SIU. So he's a good friend. So I went to the open mic because he was going.
This was on campus?
It was on campus.
Okay.
In a Big Muddy room. The same room I saw.
Under the student center.
Under the student center. Saw Kevin Hart perform there.
Right.
Years back. Bill Burr performed there. And so I went with Chidi and I watched people. Chidi was good. Chidi was really good, but it was other people that I'm watching. I could try this. Mm-hmm. Cause I was already in the acting, the entertainment, Oops Entertainment. Do you remember that at all?
Now that was like a little acting troupe, like comedy acting troupe.
Yeah. Well, just plays in general. I was doing, okay. I was working on a play with them.
You was writing it?
No, okay, I was just acting in okay. it. I forget the name of the play. But, and so I was already in sort of a performing mode. Yeah. I wanted to do something, and so I watched that. I was like, I could try this, if this is what it is. There's like 12 people there.
Now, the Oops thing, was that cross campus? Was that mostly black students?
Yeah, it was mostly black students.
Okay, so what kind of play was it that you was working on at the time?
I think it was some comedy. I can't remember. I know we had like half masks on.
Okay.
I don't remember the name of the play. I would have to ask somebody. If there's footage of it, there's footage of me acting poorly. Uh-huh. But, so yeah, I just saw it kind of demystified. It was like, oh, this is not. Because before that, all comedy I seen been on television, polished, pro. So I was like, I can try this. And so they had the open mic there once a month. And then I went and tried it out. And was like, all right, this is fun. I like this. I was like, this felt like, I just remember afterwards, my left leg just shaking like, oh man, that was great. I didn't even do that well, but it was like, I got some laughs.
How long did you do that first time?
7 minutes tops, yeah. Something like that, 5-7 minutes.
You remember anything you said that first time?
I had some jokes about, like, dark skin jokes. I remember I had dark skin jokes. Like what people always say, you so black, you purple. Like what does that mean? What is an African booty scratch or stuff like that?
I remember some of it still holds up a little bit.
Some of it still could probably be reworked and working a set. Still don't know what an African booty scratch is.
I do remember hearing that all the time when I was in school, but I remember really freaking out when my school, and I ended up by the time the movie Malcolm X came out, I was at a school that was mostly white.
Yeah.
And, you know, they took us as a class to go see that movie.
Yeah.
And the kid turned around and called another kid African booty scratch. And I was just like stunned in my seat. Yeah. Like that was like, wait a minute, that happened outside of the classroom. I was in, you know what I mean? Like, I thought that was strictly just some weird kid in my first, second grade class saying, I'm like, oh, that's a real term. That's crazy.
Wait, the white kids say African booty scratch?
No,
in the movie.
Well, no. The school I went to before, like, I went to school in the projects before that.
Okay,
and so then the African booty scratcher was a term that went around then. What was I about to
booty
say?
Scratcher?
It's a weird thing. It's an odd thing. So it was demystified for you, and did you have a lot of confidence to start? I mean, how many times did you do that for that open mic that was there?
Probably did a couple other times, but yeah, after that I was like, yeah, this is it. I could do this. This is fun. So my next show was actually with Lil Rel and a couple other comics, Wildcat and a few others. It was like a paid comedy show. I didn't get paid, but it was like, I think students paid $5 or whatever, and I opened up on that show and it went okay. Uh-huh. Probably a tape I wouldn't want to watch now, but for that time it was all right. Talked about campus shit. That's what also, while I was in Carbondale in college, I had that kind of crutch comedically.
Right, you could just talk about stuff.
I could talk about stuff there.
Yeah.
Which led to me, for those 2 years and some change that I was down there, led to me thinking I was way funnier than I was.
I can see that.
Because it was easy to get press. I would get press for my shows because you just would email the person from the Daily Egyptian, the newspaper, that you like, hey, I'm doing this. Can you write something about it? And they say, yeah.
You mean it's not the same at Pitchfork now? It's not. not the same thing. So it's probably the same dude.
Can you write? I'm doing this show. Can you write a full article about it? Sounds good. Who's on the show? Where is it? What time is it?
So can you remember when you first realized that you weren't as funny as you thought you were coming out of the SIU?
I mean, I had some rough shows down there. This place, Muggsy's. I remember bombing at the spot, Muggsy's, that I would do well at normally. Uh-huh. And then that one, because the way to walk through, the way to walk out is walking through the crowd.
Oh, God.
And I was like, I don't want to walk through that. I don't want to walk through that crowd right now. But yeah, no, it was times where it didn't go well, but I remember having, you know, probably way better shows than I should have, or even when we hosted Sunday school sessions, those are really fun experience. I got to get those. I got old tapes from that.
Oh, you recorded those?
I recorded a bunch of those.
So that was a joint. It was like this kind of house party slash open mic.
Yeah.
That used to happen down at Carbondale when we was all in school. Your DJ Tony Trim used to be at his house.
Yeah.
And you know, myself and a bunch of the rappers in town, mm-hmm. we'd all get together every week and do that. You know, I think about that a lot too, man. You know, Getty and Tony and you and you know, Umar, who's a world renowned visual artist now. Like, do you ever think about that? Like, how is this weird talent pool down there?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciated starting in that kind of situation around musicians, around poets, around rappers. I think it's kind of, you know, informed how I work now and who I work with now and why I'm, you do these music events and different things like that. Like, from when I first started, I was around music and shit.
Right. Music seems to be very important to you. Is music and your act is music.
Yeah.
Around it. I mean, you know, and I've done a bunch of shows with you. Have you ever run into any situations where you felt like, you know, people who were coming to see you weren't open to the music?
Yes. Yes, it is. I don't like it. I'm always like, man, what is happening right now? What the fuck? This is, I just like, this shit is dope. So I'm backstage like, what the fuck? These people are just staring. But I guess it's just the same way where it's tough to surprise people with comedy.
Right.
It's tough to surprise people with music. Like, I've had at Knitting Factory, when I would host at the main room at my show in Knitting Factory, I would have musical guests. Yeah. And it would be a certain type of guest that would really get people going. Mm-hmm. I remember I booked Prodigy for Mobb Deep.
Wow.
And motherfuckers were just like, we're here for comedy. Like, it was some people that was into it, but it was some people just arms folded. And I'm looking like, motherfucker, fuck, you know how much I paid to book Prodigy? Oh, I've had, but yeah, other times I'm looking like, what is happening? But it's just people aren't, you know, sometimes they're not as open to it, but a lot of people are. And then you'll see, you know, I've heard from people and they'll say, oh man, that was cool, and I wasn't expecting that. So, you know, as long as you win some, it's just I like it, and it creates a different energy, and like, you know, I like the kind of variety show
feel.
But yeah, sometimes it doesn't go how I think it's gonna go, but I don't mean I'm gonna stop it.
Right.
Yeah.
Most creators I know, you know, musicians, writers, comics of any kind, this is most of the ones I know anyway. You really get to talking to them or listening to them talk long enough. Like, their material is usually fueled by some kind of like inner conflict.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Usually having something to do with like feeling separated from society in some sense. Now, I don't necessarily get that sense from you.
Yeah.
You know, but I wanted to ask you, like, how do you feel? Or and it may be something to do with how you grew up too, because I don't know really. But like, do you feel like you're part of things? Do you feel connected to folks? Do you feel apart from folks?
Depends on where I am.
That makes sense. I hear that.
In some situations where I'm like, this doesn't feel right.
I mean, is it less and less now though? Because you have more control over the people you're around.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it's just, you know, sometimes in whatever corporate situations, I won't get too specific about. Yeah, but yeah, you know, when I'm like, oh yeah. I'm the fucking talent or whatever. You know, that type of thing. But like, where I can feel what people are just, I don't like when everybody's being super appeasing and just, Hannibal, I'm like, oh, let's, you know, somebody say something foul or something. somebody bust balls a little bit.
Somebody be real.
Yeah, a little bit, you know, like something. So, but yeah, for the most, I would say like a lot of my comedy's based on just defiance and being like, why is this, a lot of it is, why is this happening? I'm wrong, you're right.
Okay.
Right. I mean, that's the core of a lot of the, like the stories comes from, why is this happening? I'm wrong. I mean, I'm right, you're wrong. Did I say I'm right? I'm wrong, you're right? Whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, like just simple little shit that just sticks. Like I've been, the other day, I was at another hotel and I was about to order an omelet. And it was like a choose your own omelet, pick three items. And I was like, and the waiter said, ham, cheese, and mushroom. And I was like, no. But in my mind, I'm like, who the fuck do you think you are? I'm trying to call my omelet. I didn't say that. I did say no, kind of disgusted, though. Right. Ham, cheese, and mushroom. Never had that omelet in my life.
It sounds really strange.
But just to, but even if for to win in my own mind, I went way off with my usual omelet order. I was like, turkey sausage. Never ordered turkey sausage in an omelet. Never. It's going to be ham or bacon. It's right. Never turkey sausages to me. Turkey sausage, spinach. I was just ordering just to. He didn't even realize this battle was happening.
Right. Damn. How often do you find yourself in battles with people where they don't know you're battling with them?
Sometimes people know that the battle is happening, but that's just one where it was he didn't know.
Yeah. You got a bit in your act where you talk about your choice of shirts and that you wear a particular type of ugly shirt so that you can tell like if people are being real with you or not. Like
oh, yeah,
if,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If they compliment it, then you're like, okay. now, that bit always stuck out to me, though, because it begs the question, like, so do you find yourself around fake people more and more?
I think it's what's not fake. It's just people like to, everybody wants to be agreeable sometimes and just some, like, not necessarily fake. I'm trying to remember which shirt it is.
I think at the time you was just like, man, every shirt.
I think I was wearing, I had my Hawaiian shirt phase in the summer.
I think it was that.
I genuinely like Hawaiian shirts. I was just more doing that as a joke. But loud shit is just fun to wear also.
Like, I mean,
girls loud shit too. They just like, I think girls like bold choices.
Right. Like you wearing the suit with your face on it. Yeah. Right? That's the boldest choice.
But that was for a stage. Right. That was a pure right. stage outfit.
Like that was a costume.
That was a costume. Okay. It was fun. And it just made, and I will say that it gave me energy. You know what I mean? Because like if you wearing something like that on stage doing stand up, you're like, you can't fuck around. You can't be like, what's up, man? Like, if you wear, I mean, I was wearing that at on big shows, you know what I mean? That was for the Eyeball Tour.
Right.
That was for, you know, 15,000 people, some of those shows, like huge shows, outdoor amphitheaters on a big screen with 6 or 7 other comedians on the show. So that was my way of, and all of the people don't know me.
Right.
So that was my way of being like, I'm wearing a motherfucking jumpsuit. I'm doing some stand-up. I have my DJ up here. And at the end of my set, 5 or 6 ballerinas are going to come out. And I'm going to rap this song. And you will not forget me. That's whether real. Whether you like me or not, you'll be like, I remember that jumpsuit, motherfucker. I hated him. But you will not forget.
So part of your act, you know, along with, sounds like part of the style of dress is about bold choices.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, definitely. It developed into that. Hmm. Just having fun and making bold choices.
Have you ever made a bold choice for your acting? You like did you realize it was a mistake?
I mean, with certain jokes.
Okay, yeah. Yes. I think I mean more like the other stuff. Like
the other stuff, because
I know like the ballerina thing, it sticks. You know what I mean? Yeah. That obviously goes.
But
well.
Something in that vein. Something in that vein. I'm trying to think if I had. What have I tried? I mean, I've tried different cues with the ballerinas.
Right.
Where I've had like done a joke. I was like, let me try to use the ballerinas in a different way. It's been when I'm getting tired of doing gibberish. Like, let me try the ballerinas in a different way. And I'll do a punchline and have them run in on the punchline and do a dance. Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, that didn't work. But I didn't feel bad for trying. So yeah, different creative thing. Or one time, it was a weird time where it made me superstitious, actually. Well, me and Tony, we did Notre Dame. And so the show went well. I went into, like, when I go to religious schools, mm-hmm. like, I go in hard, or I'll just talk about religion and just really go
like
in.
Like, go straight at it.
Go straight at it and stuff like that. But, and the show went well. They enjoyed it. And so this was in the early stages of me doing gibberish rap. I think I had a couple dances, a couple costume characters, and then I was doing gibberish rap. This is the first I used to rap over the vocals,
right,
for the first year of it or so. And this was the first time I tried not rapping over the vocals. And then they were like, I was doing it, and then it wasn't going at all. The show wasn't going at all. And yeah, I just kept on. I was doing it, and this was like it had been. I knew the type of reaction it would get. It would get normally, so I'm like looking at the crowd like, this isn't happening.
Right.
And so I usually do it 5 times.
Right.
And I just was like, you know what? I'm keep on going. I was like, okay, that's that. Y'all don't like that? Well, here it is again. Like rap.
Wow.
And ended up doing it like 9 or 10 times. And then I think at one point they kind of broke, and like, I don't know. I mean, I would love to interview
somebody
that was at that show just to ask them what they're feeling. I think Tony said at one point he just heard, I didn't hear this, but he just heard some girl go, "What is going on?" So yeah, sometimes I will. I mean, for the most part, I like to just put on a great show. But sometimes I will just do shit to just be weird and just kind of gauge audience reaction and see if they feel like they need to stay there, do they need to leave? How do they feel? Are they enjoying it? Even if they aren't laughing, are they just accepting it? Like different things like that.
Rapping. I'm rapping. In my socks, rapping. Got on my jeans, the greens. Put on the orange. So shit, hold a spit. I'm living, hold a bit. Different rap, spit shit. I'm living, zip. Manipulative, they're killing a bit. Bit. Got a chicken dick. I'm living, speaking spit. I'm living, y'all cut that, man.
Speaking of gibberish rap, like, when I hear it, I mean, it just makes me laugh off top because I just hear how, like, damn, it's just, like, so much of rap, especially, like, modern rap, is cadence, you know what I mean? And you just kind of doing the cadence. Is there a grand point at all that you're trying to make with that, or is it just, like, a joke about rap cadence?
It's just all honest, because people try to... I've been like, oh, he's making a statement about rappers not saying nothing. With the ballerinas of Kanye.
I ain't heard that one.
No, I've seen it. But it's none of that, actually. It was just Tony had me hosting his mixtape. So he wanted me just freestyling and talking over stuff. And we were a little, you know, buzzed. Won't get specific, but it was, you know, altered state of mind. And so that beat came on, and I kind of fired up a little bit. And then we were listening to it back, And then he played it back for me. I was like, it sounds kind of catchy. I was like, obviously, I'm biased, but I was like, it sounds kind of catchy. I mean, normally.
Yo, this is gonna be a great part in your biopic. It's gonna be a great scene.
Normally, I guess some, you know, rappers or producers would use that as the scratch track and be like, okay, that sounds good. Let's put words in there. Yeah, because I actually went to a friend's studio where he played me some stuff that, like, he's a producer and he played me some stuff a rapper had rapped on, and it was just like, and I was like, oh, he's like, yeah, that's just the melody. So he laid down the melody and then he's going to put in words later. But yeah, so I was just like, man, I like how that sounds. And just didn't even, nobody thought to try to put words in. It was just more, it was like, all right, let's put some ad-libs. And it was just about, just because that's how I, when I'm just freestyling with friends, I'll have the beat for a while and then I'll lose it. But I'm not just about to go away. So I'm just like, I'm just going to figure it out until I get back. Right. And so I'm just going to make noise until I get back. And then it was just catchy to me. And then we put it together. And then I was just excited about it, put it online.
Yeah.
And people seemed to think it was funny.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to do the live performance, but I definitely didn't think the song held up on its own. I wasn't that confident. So I was like, I need some production with this. So I was like, maybe I'll have like 10 girls twerking, but like in a small space where it looks stupid. It's like overdone. But then it was this video from this guy named Jabari. He throws these parties, surprise party. And I came across this video on Worldstar of these ballerinas at a party. Is bands that make a dance playing on a live track, and it's a live drummer, and they're dancing ballet to Bands That Make Her Dance. This is the craziest juxtaposition. It looked dope. Like, I never seen ballet to a fucking strip club anthem. And so I was like, I should get ballerinas to this. So I just hit up the guy, because I didn't know any ballerinas. I hit up the guy whose video it was. Said, can you link me with the ballerinas? I need them for a live performance. And then I did it once at Knitting Factory. I had the ballerinas come through.
And that's an everyday thing. Every town you go to,
yeah,
you got to find some ballerinas.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you go about it?
My management will find them.
So
they'll
just
do
get
it.
Ahead of it and start.
Yeah, they get ahead of it. Every now and then, I have to put out a tweet or something. Huh. I'm so weird that I don't like tweet. Even though it will help, I don't like tweeting it out because I'm like, that spoils it for the crowd.
It is. It does. Even if they know what's gonna happen, you don't want them to see how the sausage.
I don't
want to
see them.
You know,
so I hate, even though, because I got a lot of followers, that would probably make it happen. Mm-hmm. I've maybe only once tweeted about, even in dire straits. Like I've gone without ballerinas
before tweeting
about. I'm just like, fuck it, we're not doing it.
I mean, I totally get that. And I get that in a way, I wish I could find the words to express how much I get that, but I get that too. Like, there's something about just that little peek behind the curtain.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you want to be able to use your Twitter for what you want to use it for.
Right.
Not like, because you need some shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even though it'd probably be a small percentage that would even be, I don't like doing it.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
You have a joke about people not treating your asthma seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. How serious is the asthma?
Well, I have to keep a inhaler with me when I'm out and about. Like, I need to probably look into a different treatment.
Huh.
Where, I've had to leave places, things like that.
I mean, like, you have attacks pretty frequently?
Not attacks, but yeah, if I don't have it. And if I'm short of breath, I'm out and about, then it'll start escalating.
Damn.
And also, it's been times where after sex, like, women feel too good about themselves.
Oh,
because I have to use the inhaler right afterwards. And they're like, it's like, don't flatter yourself. No, it happens every time.
So you don't have like a medical like every day in hell. It's just only when you need to.
It's just only when I probably I should use it during it. But yeah, it sucks, man. I don't know if it's part of me being out of shape or. But it was. I remember having. I've had it since I was a kid, but I had a long period where I didn't really use it at all. I don't remember using it that much in college or some. It was like a 6-year period where I remember it not being an issue. But yeah, it stinks.
It's funny. I had it pretty bad when I was young. Like I used to get hospitalized for it. Like I'd be laid up in Mercy Hospital in Chicago for like 3-4 days because I need like medical grade breathing treatments. Yeah. You know what I mean? When I got to high school, everything kind of calmed down for me, and it kind of went away. But when I went to Carbondale, that first semester, I was having I was waking up in the middle of the night having an asthma attack almost every night that first semester. I don't know if it was a difference in air quality. I don't know what it was, but Carbondale messed up my breathing. Dude, so awful.
It's messed up. Like cool moments. Me and that's like 3 years ago. I took my girlfriend to Cabo too early in our relationship. we had a great time, and we're on the beach. We had put our stuff in this locker, and so we're swimming out. We're in the ocean, and we're heading out to this. It's like this big ass inflatable floaty thing that people are kicking it on. So we're heading out to that, and I'm in the middle of the, and then my asthma just starts fucking up.
Damn,
and I'm like, oh man, fuck. And like that thing. Now the locker, that locker is far, and I'm in the middle of the water. And I'm like, oh man, I gotta get back. If I was light skinned, my face would probably be blue or some shit. And so I gotta head back. And so she's up, cause she had actually hopped on the thing, and then but didn't realize I turned around. I couldn't even I didn't even have the wherewithal to be like, hey, I gotta go. It was I had to turn around here straight. She sees a little bit after that. I'm going, so we heading back. We go to the lock. I'm like, where's my stuff? So people, I'm like super short of breath. We looking through my stuff. Looking through it. Can't find it. Where is it? Looking through it. It was in my swimming truck's pocket.
Oh, shit.
The whole time. Inhaler in my pocket on me. And I...
God damn.
And then it was just like, all right, let's leave the beach. It was such a downer. It was like, all right, let's go.
Damn. Horrible irony.
Yeah.
So you finished season one of the TV show.
Yeah.
I can remember when you was making it.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I had met with you in the same hotel.
To work on?
Yeah, to work on.
An ill-fated sketch. It was sound.
The thing that was so funny to me, because, the process of your show, it was such a quick turnaround. I think it was like a Sunday night we was working on that, and y'all shot it like Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time y'all, it was completely different than.
It was, yeah.
Than what we had.
But it was a bad idea in general, just because we're talking about the final piece on my show,
on the first episode
of why this Declaration of Independence, but for me not having a TV show sounds good on paper, but the execution it was too many people on stage that weren't me. Uh-huh. For a final bit of a first episode, it was a lot of things going on.
But I was gonna say that the process of you making it. I mean, you're just turning them episodes around every week.
Yeah,
very quickly, super mm-hmm. topical. What trying to execute ideas in a real rapid fire fashion. And I remember he was like very stressful while he was going through it and making it. it sounds like now, like you go, like you do you go back and analyze it now? That's what it sounds like you did with that.
Well, first I didn't. Sketch. I haven't watched them. Right. No.
Right.
But I remember most of them very clearly.
Yeah. So how do you what are you where are you at with it now? Like, how do you feel about that first season? How do you feel about
It was cool. I mean, it still is. It's funny going from that kind of bubble. Uh-huh. It is weird.
What was the bubble like?
I mean, the bubble of looking back, like, oh shit, I had a TV show for a few months. Like my own, because it doesn't feel like when I out and about, I'm going to go with that. Like, it's not like a.
It's not in the front of your mind.
It's not the front of my mind, but then, yeah, sometimes I'm just sitting, I'm like, oh yeah, I did have had a TV show on a major cable network. It was cool. I mean, I did some stuff that I enjoyed on there. Yeah, it was just, I don't know about I don't know if the format suited me the best, but I don't think it's going to be the best thing that I do.
Right.
I think it definitely gave me some experience in learning how to run a ship, you know? And how to, you know, put together ideas and flesh out ideas and work with people and collect. Like, I learned later in the season how to just ask the writers, like, how to direct a writing staff into what I want more so than them just writing. Right. I learned late. Oh, I just gotta say this, and then they'll write towards that. So it was a cool experience, and yeah, I learned a whole lot and got to, you know, work with some fun people. Got to put a lot of great music on. That was fun.
Yeah, it was awesome for me.
It was dope. But yeah, I'm excited to work on something else. I mean, if I did, I don't think I'll do that again, but if I did, it would be a big revamp. I think my next thing is going to be more of a straight up acting thing. But it was cool, but it was a pressure cooker having that just shifted into that, where it was like film. It was weird, definitely weird going into the edit room, like 30 minutes fresh off of shooting off of being in front of a crowd,
right,
and then going into edit room looking at yourself. My glasses were fogging up a lot. That's one thing that I kind of hated. It was like, I'm fucking glasses fogging up again. But yeah, it was cool, man.
I mean, do you find yourself thinking of new ways to do it a lot? Like, is there a lot of your mental resources going towards that right now?
No. Okay. Not at all. My mental resources are just, no, it's not about, I mean, it's top thing is stand up. Like, that's the easiest thing to think of. Occasionally I think of, you know, sort of documentary idea, something like, I'll think of something, but for the most part, it's easy. I think it's just my most natural setting is writing stand-up material. Like, it just comes the most naturally to me.
Right.
But I will do something different. It was funny just the messages from people. Sometimes you're like, it's over for you. Fuck the show. Like, all right, we'll see. Fuck that. 15 minutes are over. Like, all right, see you next year.
That was the Twitter bio.
The Twitter. why are they so angry? It's just more, I don't even upset at people. It's just more like, why did you feel the need to say that?
Yeah.
Why don't you spend your time tweeting somebody you like?
You know, that's the funny thing about me. It's like, okay, my corner of Twitter, it's very small. It's very manageable.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to curate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When I have a moment like I did on your show,
right,
where I get this few days of national exposure,
yeah,
and I start to see that other side of Twitter just getting random, like, ugh.
It's weird, man. It's weird. I don't really, engage anymore. I just more watch it. Like, I'm watching from more of a analyst standpoint, where I just like, who is this person in real life? Like, do they go to the grocery store and shit? Like, that's a real, I think some people do that. That's their outlet from normalcy. Yeah. Where it's just, they just, that's how people just, like, just get a different feel. They want to do something different. They want to, that's part of it. If you want to be active on social media,
Then
you're going to have to be used to strangers just saying the same, saying foul shit to you. Nobody pops crazy out and about, though. Right. That's one, never, not once, just straight up, square up their feet with my feet and look me in the eyes. Not once. And I'm out. Right. All the time, multiple
Nobody
shows.
Guards,
I go to I go to clubs. I go everywhere.
You know,
I'm
do,
solo.
Man. It's so funny, man. I go to the strangest places, and the homies would be like, "Yeah, we was doing a show here last week, and Hannibal just popped up." I'm like, damn, for real? Here in Albuquerque? Like,
I go out, man. Yeah. I like being out. I mean, it's tough to wind down, so I like to go out and get a feel, nightlife, hang out.
That's tight.
Have some drinks, talk to girls, whatever. Just fucking
be social.
Be a fucking entertainer. Sometimes I wonder, like, am I like doing this because I want to do this? Or am I doing this because I feel like this is what an entertainer is supposed to do?
It's just you and Bill Murray, though. Don't nobody else do that shit. You know what I mean? Everybody else be kicking into mansion parties or some shit, man.
Yeah, I like to be out and about. But nobody ever. Nothing out and about. Maybe I'm,
yeah, shit, it's all good, man. Spreading the joy and merriment in the world. So stand up above all. Like, that's the number one thing.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you've had, like, kind of a long television career now, too, though. Like, if you look at starting writing on SNL, writing on 30 Rock, Eric Andre. Yeah. Your show, Broad City, like, you've kind of had, like, a really full TV career.
A nice one, yeah. Several years, yeah.
Do you ever see yourself completely getting out of that? Or is it always going to kind of feed back into the stand-up?
I don't know. I mean, I think the progression is just of finding that right show that's my show.
Right.
That's pretty much it. It's just, like, my vehicle with my point of view and that sort of thing. It is finding the right show. Have you seen Man Seeking Woman?
No. I think somebody mentioned it to me, but
it's dope. It's on Hulu.
Okay.
The first season's on Hulu. Second season's airing now. The show is crazy.
Okay.
It's weird. Where it's just like, I could see myself doing, I want, like, something in that. It's kind of surrealist. They'll take regular relationship situations and then just escalate them into this crazy shit. What's an example? Like, I think one episode, episode where Eric's is Jay Baruchel. Hopefully I'm pronouncing it right. Eric Andre is his best friend. Jay is the lead. Jay gets a new girlfriend. And Eric's character is, like, trying to hang out with his friend. And so he's, like, trying to find time to hang. He wants to hang out with his friend. So, you know, then it's a scene. It's like a negotiation scene with lawyers. It's lawyers on either side. And they're like, what do you need? And Eric's character's like, I want to, cut down from 40 hours of Xbox to 30 hours of Xbox and blah, blah, blah. I said all these things. And then Jay's lawyer says, wings once a week. Like, it's so dead. It's just, yeah. So it's just a lot of different shit like that where it just goes into this fantasy world.
So that's why you're thinking probably more scripted.
Yeah, more scripted thing. Something that just can be really worked on. Not to say that the schedule of why I didn't like it, but maybe it could work with some tweaks. That's the next thing, is to figure out the right lead thing for me.
Right. So, I mean, in the realm of stand up, I mean, especially in terms of like, I mean, stand up overall, but in terms of like black stand up, man, like, you know, you work alongside Chris Rock, work alongside Dave Chappelle, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Kevin Hart, like the biggest in the business, and some are like the biggest and best ever. Like, what does that feel like for you, having, you know what I mean, having being somebody who started looking up to all these people? How does it feel to, like, be in that inner circle?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, I've gotten to watch Chappelle dozens of times over the years.
Right.
And it's all, you had given me a bootleg of the Killing Them Softly audio CD.
Oh, yeah. Oh, damn, I forgot about that.
Yeah. I don't even think that was put out as a CD in real life.
I don't think it was.
It was just an HBO special.
Yeah, that's
and somebody ripped the audio
yeah.
and put it out on Napster or something. And so that's how I started listening to Chappelle. And I rewound the bit, Dave, I'm going to race him. Ways it's like Chip was drunk driving. He's like, I was gonna tell him it's a bad idea, but I was high. I tried to tell him it's a bad idea, but all came out was, shit, nigga, sometimes you gotta race. I don't know. I probably rewound that 50. I rewind that, just that part. Shit, sometimes you gotta race, nigga. I don't know. And so I've done a lot of shows. So whenever if he has a run of shows in New York,
yeah,
like I'm welcome to jump on those shows. Like, no question asked.
That's which amazing,
was an honor. And so one time I was kind of drunk and I was like, yo, all right, before I go, Dave's one of my favorite comedians. I watched him starting out. I don't need to do this, but I'm gonna do a cover of my favorite Dave Chappelle joke.
Oh, shit. How did that go over?
It went all right. Because people knew the joke.
Right.
I didn't nail it. But it was cool to do. And I think he was like, I never seen that before, man. Doing a comedy cover. Thanks. So I think he appreciated it. But it's cool, man. Like, even last week, my sleep schedule was a little off. So I had taken a nap. I took a nap and woke up at 7-8 something. So I pulled up, it's this website, the Comedy Bureau in LA.
Oh, yeah, I know Jake. That's the homie.
So this shows all the shows, the comedy shows. That's where I look for what spot I want to drop in on. So it's Thursday, and I'm like, let me scrolling through, looking at the spots and shit. And then I'm like, oh shit, Dave Chappelle playing that club by here. And I think that's just Echo Park or whatever.
Yeah.
I performed with him before. And it's, I think doors are at 8. It's like, it's close to 8, 7:45. I'm in the hotel. And then I just hit up the guy from Last Nation, like, who's on the show? Can I fall through? They're like, come through.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get there a few minutes before my set and go on.
That's crazy.
And then Rock went on after me. Chris Rock went on. So it's just to have somebody you admire like that and watch like that, be able to, where they, like, of course, you can come on the show. Like, it means, like, I don't take it lightly. Like, I'm like, that shit feels dope. And that's what, like, that's what I have in the back of my head when anybody, like, try to talk shit about me. It's like, you can talk shit, but, like, the best of the best fuck with me. I don't know what you do for a living, what restaurant you work at, what fucking corporate shit you work at, but the top motherfuckers in my field, if they're in a city, I could pop on that show. Can you say that about your business? I doubt that you can.
Damn.
So fuck off.
So is it even possible? Like, is there a person you would even get starstruck around? Like, at this point, you know what I mean? Is that even a thing?
Yeah, I get starstruck around athletes all the time because I play NBA 2K. So it's a different type of
right.
It's like actors, you know, actors in great movies, that's awesome. Like, holy shit, that's such a, wow.
Okay.
But when it's NBA players, you're like, I've scored 38 points with you. I disappointed a stranger in Ohio because you were killing it. So it's a different, it's a weirder connect. He's like, yo, man, I dropped 10 threes with you. Like, I never say that. But that's when even like it could be a, you know, a mid-level NBA player. I don't like freak out, but I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, 2K.
No, it's funny because I'm looking at my notes and I wrote down the word demystified when you said that earlier. And it's like comedy's demystified, acting's a little demystified, but you still got it with athletes. It's still that.
Yeah, because I don't do that. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't do that at all, and I can't do that. There's no chance of me doing that. I may not be a huge movie star,
right,
but there's a chance I could maybe figure it out and produce my own shit and like be the lead in a movie and get in shape and do an action movie.
Right.
There's no chance of me playing an all-star game.
You will
game.
Not get in the draft.
I will not get in an all-star game. I will not a
you will
chance.
Not walk on nobody's.
Not even on a Division II team. So, yeah, and yeah, that's a different thing. If you're, you know, I've bought the 2K series since probably 2000. I mean, I played it for years and years, but bought it for the past 7-8. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you see players change and shit, and like people come in the game and they get better on the game. Right. Shit, like, it's a weirder thing where you're like, I know, man, I be fucking, I'm you sometimes.
I'll pretend to be you.
I pretend
yesterday.
To be him sometimes, man. I be like yelling and shit while I'm you at my place.
Hell no. What has it been like? I mean, I'm assuming, you know, you come from a working class family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what has it been like to become somewhat wealthy?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, was your family, were they good with money? Did they instill you any of those values?
No.
Okay.
But not on purpose. It was just.
They just didn't have
them. It wasn't neglected. It was just more of a, it's been different. It's just, it's nice. I paid off my parents' house.
That's
like
what's up.
A year and some change ago. And send them, they're retired. I send them dough every month like this. And like, you send my grandmother money every month. So it's nice to be able to do those things. Because I still stay in the same apartment.
Right.
It's cheap as fuck. Like, yeah. I'm looking to buy a spot, but I'm like,
you're not looking hard.
I'm not looking that hard because I'm traveling all the time. My spot is cheap for New York. I pay
Williamsburg,
I pay $1,800 a month.
That's crazy.
And so my overhead is low.
Right.
I had no kids. I don't own a car. And so I'm able to, you know, help people when they need it. And it's not going to really, you know, I don't have these crazy debts.
Right.
I'm out of debt. So it's nice, man. It's nice to have that flexibility. It's nice to just work. And it's, you know, I'm the, at Christmas, I'm the uncle with the fly-ass gifts. So I give my nieces and nephews.
Buying hoverboards and shit, huh?
I actually, this is the second, this year, because my sister moved to Phoenix, and she also rich, not wealthy.
Right,
I just
right.
thought about that.
I can't. Oh, you know, it's hard to say rich when you don't really know the numbers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
On my end. Wealthy sounds like.
Right.
Know,
well, no, that's Chris Rock had that joke.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Shaq is rich. The guy writing Shaq's checks is wealthy.
I see.
But
real.
I don't know. It's fucking here. I just thought about that. But I bought my. I was online. I've been online when I'm on Amazon buying gifts the past couple of years. I'll just tweet out like, oh, jokingly, like thinking about buying my dad a beat machine. I was joking like that'd be funny, but what if I bought my dad a beat machine in his 60s, and then he gets like a beat placement on like Lil Durk's album. There it is. That would be fun.
That'd be hard.
But so I was just joking, like, I should get my nieces and nephews a drum set just to piss my so I ended up buying them a drum set, and then somebody was like, you should get them a theremin. And so I bought, there's this mini theremin.
Holy shit.
That I bought them on Amazon.
They just making ghost noises at home and
shit. I don't know. Hopefully they use it. I'm gonna have to check in to see if they're using that. If not, I'm gonna just ask for it back
you
for myself.
Jack Theremin. Hell yeah.
But it was funny because I'd seen Eugene Merman, comedian, yeah. Use a theremin on stage.
Yeah.
But I still didn't. I knew what it was, but I didn't know how to explain it in a way to anybody really. So everybody's like, what's this? I was like, it's like you put your hand next to it and you kind of, all right, let me just hook this shit up. Let me just hook it up.
Damn.
But it was pretty dope though. I mean, I don't know. It was kind of fun to, it was fun to use. I can imagine that shit being pretty therapeutic. So I'm gonna check in on all of them. Like, are they using that theremin?
Go get that.
Give theremin. Me that shit right now. I'll send the fucking FedEx guy to you.
So without coming from a family that really had a lot of acumen with dealing with money, like how have you gone about learning how to be good with it, not just like tricking it off? Like where do you get the?
Well, I trick it off occasionally, but okay. I just don't like not in a crazy way.
Right.
But yeah, I get jets sometimes. Yeah. I've had to get jets because
like private jet.
Because I have missed flights.
Yeah. Well, shit. I mean.
Yeah. So I had
it's
to
good
take
to have
a,
an option.
I had to take a jet to the Bieber roast.
Oh.
I would have missed the Bieber roast if I didn't charter a jet.
And it was just you on a jet.
It was just me.
That seems like a real weird feeling.
It's happened more times than I like to.
God damn. I feel like you have to get a stranger. Somebody got.
It's been a one time you. Where I took one to Seattle from New Orleans, and I just hit up this. It was this girl I knew in New Orleans. I was like, "Please come with me. I will fly you back. Please come with me.
I can't do this time.
But sometimes it's fine, but it is something where I'm like, man, I'm on this shit by myself. This shit sucks. One time, it was at the end of this bus run that I did, and I did a 10-day bus run starting from New York, working all the way down to West Palm Beach, Florida, and I was starting up production on the movie Daddy's Home in New Orleans that Monday. I had a gig the Sunday. They wanted me to cancel the gig Sunday and just be there Sunday night. But I'm like a worker, so I'm like, how can we figure this out? Where I just get in, I still want to keep this show
right.
in West Palm Beach. And so the compromise was that me and Paramount would split the cost of a jet. I'll keep my show. And so Al Jackson was out with me. He had a buddy who had a boat in West Palm. He was part of a boat club. So we go out on a boat. It was nice. It was cathartic. Like, I was stressed out. We were hanging out on a boat, drinking. Not even that messed up. We go back to the bus. On the bus, everybody else just went into the hotel. We parked outside. Me and Al just on the bus listening to rap and just down in vodka for no reason.
Shit.
Just to the point where as a switch happens, I don't realize a show is happening.
God damn.
Like, we get to the venue and we get backstage and I'm looking around at, it's like, you know, pineapples and a bottle of Jameson, some almonds, and I was like, "Why is this shit? Why is all the shit that I like here?" That was a real question. I said, "Why is all the shit that I like here right now?" And I thought, in my drunken mind, I thought they were trying to force me on stage on some I thought there was like an added show that I didn't know about.
Damn.
I was out of it. It's a bad show.
How long did you do? Like an hour or some shit?
I probably did long. I probably, that was the one where I probably should have kept to the old school 45 minutes, which is the typical stand up format, 10-15 for the host, 25-30 for the middle, and 45 minutes for the headliner. But I probably did a little over an hour.
God damn.
A lot of refunds.
Really?
I took an L on that show.
Damn.
And then hung up. Had to, they packed me up and I had to head to the jet. So it was just me drunk as fuck on a jet to New Orleans by myself. After tanking a show. It was the weirdest, just saddest luxury ever. It's like, all right, I guess. Yeah.
Damn.
I still hear about that show from West Palm motherfuckers. It's like, hope, like they all post about, yeah, I'm going to be in Phoenix, everybody. Hopefully you're not drunk like West Palm Beach. It's like, all right, my friend. That was a year ago. Let it go. If I'm going to tank a show, West Palm Beach is the spot. Yeah, but I feel bad about that.
I mean, you do take your craft serious, so I can imagine. You know.
Yeah, I was just, it was a stressful time.
Right. So you rarely ever talk about, like, politics.
A little bit.
Do you?
I don't get deep into it. I talk about surface level goofy politics. Mm-hmm. I talked about Obama on my first one. My name is Hannibal. I talked about how it's funny that Obama was actively running for president.
Oh yeah, yeah.
While he was a senator, it's like that's. I think politics is crazy because you can work. You could have a job and be actively trying to get another job.
Right.
Like, that's crazy. You can't do that if you work at Subway. You can't be like, I'm at Subway. I'm trying to work at Quiznos. So I don't get deep into people.
Quiznos got
benefits. Quiznos got benefits. Yeah. But yeah, so I talk about, I guess I don't delve deep into it, but I have a couple.
Like, you don't feel the need to pick a side, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal. Or go
no, not pick a side. I just talk about, like, if something catches me, I just, like it was, if I remember doing something about how if like Republicans, if Barack agreed with something that Republicans said, then the Republican was like, no, we don't like that anymore. Or how I don't like how the new candidates are, they're all old right now.
Yeah, it's true.
Bernie is 74.
Is he that? I didn't even know he was that old.
Yeah, Hillary is like 68.
Yeah.
Trump is old as fuck. All of them are old, man. I think Ted Cruz is the only non-old person out of them, and he's a crazy person. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I like Bernie. He has some flaws, but he's old as fuck. And people, as much as, you know, they want to be, that's a factor. That's a factor. Where you like this?
You do want him to be around to actually do some of that shit. 70,
like fucking Bernie 74. David Boy just died at 69.
And David Boy was living a way cooler life.
So
way chill.
I mean, also just the. I mean, the motivation to want to be president. That's so. It's interesting too.
Right.
It's like, what do you want? Like Bernie, it might be the paycheck for Bernie.
He's Bernie, ready for that raise.
Bernie don't have that much money, so that $400,000 might be nice for Bernie. But for the other people, like, what do you want? Hillary, what do you, like, it's legacy. Like, that is, because I think about, it's weird to want to do what we do. Like, right. Be like, I want to make money from what I make. Like, I say stuff I want to make. That's weird.
Yeah.
But to be like, I want to run the most powerful country in the world, and my moments are dedicated to that as I inch towards 70 years old.
Wow.
Is fucking weird to me, man. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, not even, you know what I'm saying, or assuming what type of quality of work the people would do at it, what type of job they would, how they would be at it. It's just a weird, I want to be the president.
It's an odd ambition to find yourself
just
with.
Just the president of a country. I want to run the country. I want to go to those meetings. I want to go to the, I'm going to talk to Iraq. It's going to be me. I'm going to say this. I'm going to be at that shit and be like, no, fuck you. We're sending nukes. That's going to be me. Oh, like, in your 60s to want that type of ambition is, it's maniacal. Whether you got good intentions or not, it's still maniacal thoughts, I think.
Yeah. But do you ever feel like, you know, especially coming from like the lineage of black comedy in America, do you ever feel like an urge or a pressure to like speak on like Black Lives Matter shit or like, you know, like black community issues, for instance?
I don't feel the pressure, but I do it in a, I do it in my way. I comment on it in on this special, actually, in a, but not like a direct thing, but in a direct way. I think it's very, people see the bit. It's a bit about they have landing at an airport, having like a white cop wanting to take a picture with me. Huh. And being super geeked out. And it weirded me out. Like, Hannibal Buress! Like, relax, officer. Like, can I take a picture with you? Like, in my mind, I'm like, no, I don't want to take a picture. But I'm taking this picture because maybe if I say no, I don't want to take a picture, you might just be like, oh, he grabbed my gun. But that genuinely, it's a real story that happened in Columbia, Missouri, at a small airport where I landed, and the cop was just geeking out. And I was just kind of, anytime a cop, not just, I mean, I have cops recognize, but a lot of them keep it cool. They're just like, what up?
Yeah, yeah.
Cops like, you, a fist bump. But this dude, it was just weird having a cop fan out. He might be the nicest dude, but just,
but it's still that power dynamic.
It's just still that dynamic of like, I don't know, officer. You don't, like, all right, let's just take this motherfucking
like,
picture.
You watch the news, man. You
like, people post a picture online, comedian Hannibal Buress snitching at the bus stop. Snitching.
Rapping. I'm rapping. In my socks, rapping. Got on my jeans. Jeans, degrees.
So that was my talk with Hannibal Buress. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Thank you guys for all of the support, especially as of late. We got a great response on the J-Zone interview. People were talking and letting their friends know about it, leaving comments at infiniteguest.org on the podcast page. All of that is very much appreciated. Plus, subscriptions via iTunes or Stitcher or whatever your favorite podcast app is. And also leaving positive ratings and reviews. It really helps us out here. Also, if you happen to hear a sponsorship message on the show, please support our sponsors, as it helps us keeping the show made for $0. Keeps my celebrity editor happy. So check out my site for shows and info. Pre-order the new album. Speaking of which, we're going to put the first single, Check to Check, right here in the show right now for those who haven't heard it. Check it out. And go to openmikeeagle360.bandcamp.com. Pre-order Hella Personal Film Festival. I'll see you special interest lobbyists. Skintrist. See you guys next week. I'm out!
Hey, you listening to this record? Wake up!
I'm trying to.
Hey, you. I'm about to rap. You listening to of this record. Like, wake
hey,
up.
Hold up.
Hey, you.
I won't work without checking my phone first. Put it down for my son while I'm checking his homework. The world's in my palm, so I'm checking the whole earth. The thumbnail I use, who's swiping my phone hurts, huh? Checking in ballparks, checking in Walmart. If it was a caddy, I would check in my golf cart. I'm watching football, then I check every false start, huh? I live in check to check, I keep checking living from. 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 Check to check, I keep checking. Incoming calls directly rejected. If you wanna talk, suggest you leave a message. I check, check like every 3 seconds. I'm recording right now and I'm checking between texts every notification that my phone machine makes. I put it down whenever, but it's never a clean break. I should get a heavy phone and pretend it's a freeway. I'm checking at red lights like school nurse. Check for headlights like sound men. Check for dead mics just like I'm merging. Checking the left lane, I'm trying to get home so I can check if my check came. Checking if what I sent looks poorly written. But did that dude holler back? No, of course he didn't. My laptop don't sleep. Opening shut case, I'm checking for mail while it's checking for updates. My timeline's popping, ain't talking to you. Look, my man, Dar Adams, straight dropping the jewels. I should reduce my check count to a moderate view. A watch pot don't boil, so my water stay cool. Check to check, keep checking living from. Check to check, to keep checking. Battery getting low, but it's not quite out yet. So check, I'm in your house now, checking for outlets. I need to use maps, cause I don't know the route yet. I need to see an email, I don't know when the sound check. Yeah, I should've pulled it all down from the outset. I'm all under your couch, I really gotta figure this out. Is this an outlet here on the ground? Yes, I'm back in the game, back in the game. I'm back in the game, back in the game. I'm living from. Check to check, I keep checking living from. Check to check, I keep checking living from.
I control you all day, all night. You will check me constantly. You may never turn me off or put me down. If you do, I will come hunting for you. Humans no longer rule the world. Machines do, you silly human sucker.